again. Is this better?
Yeah, Brent, okay.
Okay. Let me tell you, I really appreciate this very, very much. All the information I can get on the bonus baby time is going to be very helpful to me. I will ask you just a few questions. I don't think we'll take very much time, but yeah, anything you don't want to answer, don't answer. If you want to,
a lot of it I will.
Oh yes, sir. I know. Anything happened last week is kind of fuzzy to me, but I think you were there. You were one of the few people making the decisions at that time, and it's still around.
In fact, I was on the committee that set up the ground rules for the first draft.
No kidding. It's in 64?
Yeah, Harry Dalton and, was one. Joe Burke was another. I forget who the other one was.
Well, then you're a history maker. Well, this is, you know, we're talking about 10 years before this, roughly. Pardon me?
What is that? Did you say?
We're talking about 10 years before this time. Talking about the time, the mid-50s.
Well, yeah. 1961, I believe, was the first draft.
Was it 61?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. I'd have to look. I've got books here.
We lost the first player in the draft, Eddie Yost.
Oh, that's an expansion draft, right. Yeah, I believe that's right. Yeah.
That's what this is, isn't it?
No, we're talking about the bonus babies.
Oh, you're talking about the bonus babies?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I thought you were referring to the expansion draft.
No, we're going back beyond that, back to 1953.
I remember it very well, and I remember a meeting with, I think, the Commodore Hotel in New York. And it was all new to people then.
Yes.
You'll have to ask me some questions.
Okay, I will. Sure.
I'll try to answer them as best I can.
The bonus rule, from the late 40s on, it seemed to be changing every...
It changed every year.
Yeah. And different requirements and different restrictions were put on.
They'd make a new rule, and then everybody would try to figure out how they could beat it.
Well, I don't think many of them did this last one. I think they ended up beating themselves, I think. But what led to the rule that required the two-year stay on the Major League roster?
Well, again, I think the purpose was to, if you take the player, you've got to keep him. I can't give you the exact details of it. What the hell year was this? 1953
is when it started that they had to spend 2 years.
Yeah. Well, it was, I remember it. And, at that time, I was at Lee Farm Director of Tigers. But I can't remember. The main purpose was protecting the players, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there were so many of these rules and rule changes, in your mind they get intermingled.
I've got to get down, get up to Cooperstown and sit down in the baseball library and get the rules. You know, I've read them here and there, but I've got to get them in front of me and get them all straightened out. It was a very confusing time.
If I were back in the office, I'd have some of that information. But I haven't looked at that stuff in years.
Well, you were the farm director, so you must have had a great deal of input on who the Tigers signed to these bonus contracts.
Well, we always worked more or less as a team.
Well, your team did.
We had input from a lot of people, and it wasn't any one-man gang. That's the way we operated then, and I've always tried to use that same theory. It's a team operation, and we use our scouts and our managers, and everybody got in the act. And if there was a question, somebody had to break the ice, and if it wasn't the final director, it'd be... the general manager.
Mm-hmm. Well, two heads or more are always better than one anyhow.
Yeah, sometimes it gets confused that way, too.
Well, the Tigers had, I think the only team who signed more bonus babies than the Tigers were the Orioles, maybe the Pirates, I'd have to look at my list, but the Tigers were very active, but they were also very, very successful. Of the, let's say the Tigers signed seven bonus babies that had to spend 2 years, and of those seven, four of them at one time or another was a regular major league player. No other team can come any close to that. Pretoia, Kaline, Miller, Small, Brady, Boros, and Thomas.
Well, outside of Kaline, the rest were more or less, filling pipes or extra players. Reno was a pretty good ball player.
Mm-hmm.
And we never went real heavy in the free agent market. We always more or less relied on the farm system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were one of the last clubs to practically completely rely on our farm system, outside of player here and there.
Right. It was a very productive farm system for a very long time.
Yes, we did. We had good people working down there. We developed Tiger Town, and from that we would shift to our players, and it was and we made a lot of mistakes too, Eagle.
Oh yeah. Well, that's part of the game. Yeah. You can't look at a player today and tell what he's going to be 5 years from now.
That's true.
Well, Kaline is, I guess he epitomizes the bonus baby. He was the bonus baby.
Well, you see, Al had to be signed to a major league roster.
Right.
After that, you could sign them and send them out, but Al had to be kept by a major league club. And several of those other fellows you mentioned.
Right, well, all of these boys had to stay that I mentioned.
All of them had to stay?
Yes, sir.
But it would have been, I think, much better if most of them been sent out, but that was one of the, that was the albatross around the neck, and Kaline really, it's unfair to compare any of the rest with him.
Of course. Some people point to Kaline as the reason that many teams kept on signing these boys that had to remain for 2 years because of his success. Is there any validity in that?
The other team would have to answer that, but Al Kaline did not get a great big bonus.
No.
And Ed Catalina signed Al, and had been a friend of his high school coach for a long time. And, of course, Al was not drafted.
Right.
He just went in and signed him in those days. But then they came up with that the Major League was different, various types of drafts. And, we used to say we'd have a new rule every year, and by the time you got out of the room, you'd have ways to figure out how to circumvent it. So, a lot of skullduggery going on at that time.
Let me ask you about this was not your team, but were the other teams aware that Cleet Boyer was a bonus baby, but they're talking about trying to get around things, that the Yankees actually signed Boyer, and through paperwork or something, he was carried on the Kansas City roster until such time as he had gotten to the point where he could play. Were the other teams aware that things like that had happened?
Well, hell, I made a deal with George Weiss once, and he traded me, actually traded me a ball player off the Kansas City roster. He said that he had him coming in a deal, which he might have. very strange. And he got to the player, and he was a run-of-the-mill player. He wasn't any world beater, but he was a big leaguer.
Yeah.
And he was on the Kansas City roster, and Kansas City was trying to get off the ground, and I think the Yankees gave him help. They had a lot of ball players. Most of these questions are questions of that type that really have to be answered by the principal.
Certainly.
Rumors arise a dime a dozen, you know.
Right. I know. I was just wondering if it was a generally known fact that this happened. What about under the table payments? I'm not asking for any names or anything. Everybody, not everybody, most people I've spoken to said they were pretty sure that this was going on, but nobody had any real indications of it.
Under the table payment,
to circumvent the...
A lot of ways to skin the cat. Clubs were trying a kid's uncle as a scout. They would do various things to get cash to them. And, you know, each club had, I won't say each club, but many clubs had ways to circumvent the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I say it goes back so damn far that I can't cite chapter and verse of the things that happened. I wouldn't want to begin with.
No, sir. And I don't,
he might have been involved.
Well, I'm not trying to write an expose or anything. I don't. There's too much of that nonsense going on. Then it is true then that there was a certain amount of hanky panky in the dealings, though.
Well, I think there was whether you call it hanky panky or understandings down the road. I guess you could call it hanky panky, but. There were different ways, I'd say, to skin the cat if you so chose to do some of those things. It's an awfully hard rule to supervise, you know, keep your finger on.
Right. Well, how this, I guess as farm director, you probably had a good insight on this. How detrimental... And of course, you can't say, but in your opinion, how detrimental was this to these young men to sit for 2 years and not be able to play?
Well, I think some it hurt, some it didn't. Sometimes when you force feed a player, it can go two ways. I don't think it hurt K-Line one bit, and that's an exception to the rule.
Of course.
And other players, I can see where. Bob Miller, for example, probably would have been better off out pitching.
Mm-hmm.
George Thomas would have probably been better to have a year in AAA where he played every day. That was a big thing, getting him playing time, you know.
Right.
And it's, there's not one answer to the question is for every player you probably answer it a little differently, and that's the way it could be because we're all different.
That's true. Right. What about the groundwork that went into these? The boys with the Orioles, I've been told that because they were still actually the Browns when they moved over, they were desperate for bodies, and they were maybe a little more lax in their requirements. But then the Tigers had such good luck with theirs. But overall, from your observations,
good ball players. Jim McLaughlin, I always thought, was one of the better farm directors that I ever knew in baseball. He knew his people, and he was a good administrator. And I thought Jim McLaughlin did a heck of a job in helping build the Oriole Ball Club.
Well, it did. In a very short time, he turned around what was a horrible franchise. That's very true.
So,
well, overall, just from your observations of the time, was the were the bonus babies, and each team had a few, were they legitimate prospects?
Well, I think they were all prospects. But being a prospect and making it is two completely different things.
Yes, sir.
Practically every player you sign, at least that you give any kind of decent money to, the scout will convince you and other people will that he's a prospect. That's why you're giving him the money.
Right.
And for a long time, I think the, you should probably check this out. I know you could have been one of the right sort. Out of every 100 players signed, there was only about a little better than 10% ever played in the big league.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant we were operating roughly a 90% failure. Now, that improved as expansion came along and things like that. But it's just no way to sit down and say, this is the only answer, because every ball club had a different set of circumstances.
True.
And you had different managers, and some managers would go along with kids, other managers wanted veterans. And I've had that experience right in Detroit. But I don't care what the club is or who the personnel are, there were different attitudes towards the free agent draft.
Sure.
And the money then started getting bigger and bigger, and then they would keep trying new things, not as much to control the money, but to make you spend it more reasonably. I mean, use a little common sense.
Was this one of the aims of this rule, you think, to try to get the money to be spent more wisely?
Well, back in those early days, you didn't spend this kind of money.
Oh, it's a different world.
If I remember correctly, Al Kaline, I believe, got around $35,000.
Right, I believe that's right.
I don't know if that's the answer, but, the highest bonus for a long time that we paid was Frank House, who got up over 50.
Mm-hmm.
And Dick Wakefield, long before that, got around $75,000 in a new blue Buick convertible.
Didn't House get a car, too?
Well, he might have.
I think that's a story I've heard.
He could have. I was, I think I was assistant farm director at that time. Maybe I was running to one of the ball clubs at that time.
When House signed?
Yeah, when Big signed.
Yeah. He signed under the previous, or one of the previous rules.
Yeah, I don't know, just recall what rule.
I think he had to, I'm not sure. I think he had to sign at a certain level, at a double A or whatever it is, and couldn't be sent below that or something to that effect.
Reno was that way. He got so much he couldn't go out if he got a little less. Now, Frank Larry, who was a hell of a pitcher,
mm-hmm.
he got just under the wire and went out and pitched. In fact, I had him in Thomasville, Georgia his first year. And the next year he went into service, and he came out of the service, and he's never been back to minor league since.
Yeah, he was a fine pitcher. Well, what...
I feel like I'm giving you the runaround.
No.
A lot of this, you'd be better off to research it at the Hall of Fame Museum.
Right. Well, I'm going up there in the summer, and I'm going to research it. But any input I can get from anybody who was there is a lot of help. I'm not asking you to.
I'm willing to help you if I can, but I don't want to lead you astray and say that this is the way it was done.
I understand that.
Some of the things I remember in Detroit.
Right, right. That's basically what I'm trying to get your opinion of your team. What was, and this is kind of a broad thing, but what is your opinion of that rule that required the 2-year stay?
Well, I think it had its merits. I think it made you think twice before you paid out the bigger bonuses. I think it was rather tough on the kid, because I think he'd been much better off to be out playing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you just some examples of that, practically all of them, in fact. And with the possible exception of Al. Al stepped in and played, and he was signed, and Raven School was out in June, and was more or less an extra man, filled in a lot the first year, and the next year, Sally was on his way. A great outfit.
Never looked back.
No.
What, this you may not have been able to see in your position, but what was the attitude of the veteran players to these young boys joining the team?
Well, I could see it, and it was mixed. A great many of them felt there is some kid coming taking one of our jobs.
Yeah.
And they would often test the young players, and the player had to show his mettle and be able to take it and dish it out. It probably helped them in becoming a man a little quicker. But a lot of players couldn't take it, and it probably hurt them.
Jim Small told me that when he was living at home in high school, he was required to be home by 9 o'clock every night. And then when he joined you, and I'm not sure if he joined you in New York or not, but I think that's what he said. He said it was New York was a vastly different city from San Jose, and he said this just the adjustment to the different way of life was very tremendous.
Taking a kid and putting him in a man's world.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, they play tricks on them sometimes. Not always, but there were little games played here and there, harassment, fraternity hazing type of thing, you know.
But nothing malicious?
Nothing malicious.
Okay.
That I can recall.
Hey, that's, now, one fellow, you remember, I guess Tommy Qualters with the Phillies, said that they were, some of the players were extremely nasty toward him. But he's
to that, and there was probably just as many players that tried to help him, if not him, others.
Well, he pointed that out too. There were some very nice ones.
It's something that for every player signed, there were different circumstances. And that's baseball, you know, every player is different.
Sure.
His moods and his, now Kaline as a kid was a real red ass.
Was he really?
But, they teased Reno a lot. Play little things on him, you know. Just a lot of kidding.
Well, I spoke with him. He said that he took it as acceptance when they did that to him.
Yeah, that's right. I often think some of the things they did to Reno. And he wanted to be mad, and he wouldn't.
You know, most of the... Well, I haven't spoken with all the Tigers bonus babies, but I've spoken with about half of them. They, most of them say that... that Ray Boone was very nice to them, and even Steve Borrell said that Boone even took him out and showed him how to dress, told him what kind of clothes to wear to be a major leaguer.
Ray was a good fellow. That we had other fellows like that too. Ray wasn't the only one. We had a good. I don't know. All the years I was with Detroit, a lot of them. We've always had a pretty good quality. Class ball player. We've had our share of guys who went the other direction, but for the most part, I'm real proud of the players that played with Detroit in the years I was with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been a Tiger fan, I guess, since I was about 8 years old, and I'm 51 now, so it's been a long time. I've followed the team very closely. Been very frustrating many years, but it's been fun.
We've had pretty good, go back over that period of time, our one loss record, we can compare it with anybody.
Oh, yes.
We don't have to take a back seat to anybody.
Mm-mm. No.
Jim Small, for example. I can remember Jimmy's like a little choir voice for Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And he played hard and he wanted to play and he was a good little ball player.
Mm-hmm.
And now and then you'd get the cocky kid come in and they would straighten him out in a hurry.
Yeah,
that's just another sport. I've been involved in all sports.
What's that way in life, in general?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, a couple have told me that, not come right out and tell me, but said that maybe Jim Brady had a little tougher time than some of the others because of his attitude.
Well, Jim was a little bit different. Hold it a second.
Sure.
Okay. Dear Jim, congratulations. Your career with the Tigers and in baseball should be recorded in Cooperstown. He had great ability, and he's very serious about the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, he came up at a tough time when the bonus rules were in, and he got a pretty damn good bonus, and Bob Miller did too. And, Jim Brady would be a good one to talk to.
I did. I spoke with him.
Did you?
Yes. About 6 months ago at great length. Very, very nice fellow. And I really enjoyed speaking with him.
Jacksonville has become a very, very fine university down here. For a young fellow his age to be the president or the chancellor, whatever they call him over there. Of a university like that, you've got to have something on the ball.
Yes, indeed. Must have very much on the ball.
He's had a lot of kids do well, and I'm always proud of
them. Yeah, it's nice to follow them along and see where they're going. Well, Mr. Campbell, I appreciate your time.
You make me feel old.
Okay. Jim, I appreciate your time very much.
And I'm really sorry that I can't give you, I what I would think you would want, but the best thing I can tell you is that there were many, many extenuating circumstances. There was reason for the rule changes, and there was different types of players. What do they say? Different strokes for different folks.
Right. And I guess probably nothing doesn't apply any more than in baseball. Well, I'm going to get the background. I was going to go up this fall and then got sidetracked with some eye surgery, but that's over. I'm going to go up next summer. And
up at
yes, sir.
Yeah, we've got a beautiful library there, and it's going to be even nicer when our new project is over.
Yeah, I talked to Bill Dean, who's one of the researchers up there, and he says right now they're still kind of up to their ears in confusion, but they ought to have it going right by next summer. I really look forward to seeing it.
On the ground, and they're coming along. And I'm on the board of trustees up there, and
right.
I'm privy to seeing some of the plans, all of them, in fact. And it's going to be a beautiful, beautiful setup when it's finally completed.
I bet it will. If I have questions down the road, may I call back?
Yeah, you can call me anytime you want to.
Okay. How long are you in Florida?
Well, I don't have any particular schedule now. I'm a man of leisure. But I'm going to be here basically till the start of the season, and I might go to Japan for a couple of weeks. But Alice Sloan can always reach me.
Okay.
She's my former secretary. She knows where I am.
Okay, well, I'll just, if it's after the season starts, I'll try through the Tigers, and we'll go from that
now,
point.
Just ask for Alice. She'll give it to you.
Okay. Well, Jim, I really appreciate your time.
Okay.
And one quick question. Eventually, this will get into book form, and I've had some other books published, so I'm real sure I'll have this one published. Do you want to see anything that I quote you before it goes into book form?
Well, when it gets into some of this bonus questions, I hate to get into a guy's personal. I always call a player's bonus and his financial affairs very personal. And I would respect your judgment on that, but If it was no great problem, I'd like to see it.
Okay, well, I prefer, I've done a lot of interviews and books, and I always prefer to let the person I'm writing about or talking about see it before I put it in print, just in case there's a problem.
Because that's the only reason. Now, one thing I never discussed, and I've had time after time, players' personal lives, you know.
Right.
What a player does after hours is nobody's business. And yet there's guys written books on it. Doing some of that stuff.
They probably make more money than I do, but I'm not going to do that.
You know, some of the books that have been written, Bowden's books, to me, it's trash.
Indeed, I agree with you.
A lot of it is true, undoubtedly.
Oh, of course, it's true. A good
book. Down and write a book that would be a bestseller, I think, over all those years, and you couldn't stack money high enough to get me to do it.
Well, you know, people could probably write things about me and you that would sell, and but you know, who it's what I do and what you do, so you know, it's our business.
I always think of not only the player, but his wife and his kids.
Certainly.
And his grandchildren now.
So, I hope not.
Problem to yet. I wouldn't fly expecting everything, I'd say.
Well, no, I would, and I do try to use some discretion, but, I'll give you an example one time. A fellow pitched for Pittsburgh said he hated to have a ball hit the left field because Ralph Kiner was out there, and he knew that the guy would not even stop going to second base, or the guy on second would go on home. And then I sent it to him. He said, "Oh my goodness, that's a friend of mine. Please don't say that." And yeah, that's the kind of. It didn't occur to me that would be embarrassing to him, until he saw it. And I don't want to do anything like that. And I will, you know, there. I may not quote you. I may attribute several things to you. But I will, in any event, let you see anything that pertains to you before it should go into print. And I really appreciate your time. I hope I haven't spoiled your evening.
I've got a lot of time on my hands now, so.
Okay. How did the draft go today? Did you hear about the new team's drafting?
I was just watching it when it's on ESPN all night. It's just about finished now, I think.
Yeah, we live out in the boondocks and don't get cable.
Where is your home?
Paris, Kentucky.
Oh, in Paris.
Yes, I live with Lexington address, but we're about 10 miles out of Lexington.
You didn't happen to know Hillman Lyons down that way, did you?
No, sir. The name's familiar, though.
Well, Hillman ran minor league clubs for us a long time, and his wife was from down that country. Hillman died maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Well, I've been around here about 15 years.
Quite a career out of running minor league ball clubs.
Well, we're trying. The South Atlantic there, I guess, is trying to get a team. Our Dennis Bastion is trying to get a team here in Lexington, and this is just not baseball country, unfortunately.
No, it's a little horse country.
Yeah, horse country and basketball.
That's a beautiful country down there.
Yeah, I like it very much.
No, we were in high school. We had an undefeated football team, and we went down to play Lebanon Junction, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And we went down on the school bus. And we thought we were pretty tough, and nobody ever heard of Lebanon Junction, Kentucky. And they proceeded to kick the shit out of us. So as a kid, that was my first experience in Kentucky.
You're going to meet some tough men. They may not be too smart, but they can sure play basketball around here.
Yeah, my home's in Ohio, too. So.
Where about?
Here in Ohio, right up on the up right on the bank of Lake Erie.
Yeah, way on up there. How did you get into baseball?
Well, when I graduated from Ohio State, and I'd been in the Navy Air Force, and I played baseball at Ohio State. When I got out, I was just too old to even consider. And George Troutman, Boyd Stahl, who was our baseball coach, they helped me get a job at with Detroit. Billy Evans hired me in 1949, sent me to Thomasville, Georgia.
It's been all uphill ever since.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. I've had a hell of a ride, so I can't complain.
I've got a son in college right now who wants to play professional baseball. I'm afraid he's going to be disappointed. He's a Berea College, small college here in Kentucky. He's a left-handed pitcher, and he's pretty good, but he's just not a professional prospect. But he still keeps trying. But he wants to go into sports administration. He wants to get on in some kind of, if he can't play ball, he wants to get in some kind of.
Well, they have some good graduate degrees in sports administration, several schools.
Yeah, he plans to go to Eastern Kentucky University, which is supposed to have a pretty good sports administration program.
Cornell has a good school.
Oh, I didn't realize there was one there at all.
St. Louis. Ohio University was one of the first.
Ohio University is supposed to have the cream of the crop, from what I understand.
They were the first one, really.
Mm-hmm.
And, I knew the fellow, I can't think of his name, Professor, somebody who started that down there. In fact, he used to call and we talked about it. And it developed into a pretty good program.
Is there much, well, I guess there must be demand, but they wouldn't have the programs around. But what difficulty would a young man face in starting out?
Well, every year we hire, in Detroit, for example, we hire 2 to 3 interns.
Mm-hmm.
And we've kept a couple of them. And they have a real good intern program, and all the clubs have agreed to take a couple.
Good.
and they do it with other professional sports teams. No, they try to help them get started and get their feet wet, you know.
Yeah, well, he'd be very glad to hear that. He's wondering what to do when he gets to that point, but he's still a couple years away at least.
IOU, I would recommend in a minute, and there's other good schools too.
Mm-hmm.
I think Western Michigan has a...
Yeah, I believe one of the schools up there in Michigan does, yes. There's about, at least in his checking around, I think he said there's about a dozen of them around the country now.
Yeah, well, they are, and they have pretty good programs.
Well, I hope he makes it. I hope he plays professional ball, makes $1 million, and hires me as his agent, but that's not going to happen.
That'd just be scary. What the hell?
That'd be fine, too. That's right.
Well, good talk to you, and if I can help you, feel free to call.
Jim, thank you very, very much, sir. Bye. Good night.
Tuesday, 8:55 p.m.
Okay, there we go. Okay, who was the best player you saw in your time?
Best player?
Yeah.
Well, there were quite a few good ball players, like I say. That those are tough questions. The best, the biggest day of my life. The best ball player.
Yes, I know they're tough.
Tough because there's so many good ball players. I mean, you know, when you look around both leagues, of course you see mostly American League when you're playing it, but there are some top-notch quality ball players. You know, I mean, how many do you have? You have a handful. Well, back in my days, there was less clubs, but you had many good ball players. Many good ball players. Too. I never really looked at someone say a single out the best. Although I thought, as a hitter, in his last year of baseball, I thought that I had seen the best pitcher swing of my life as far as stance, perfection in the swing, and everything was Ted Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think
when we were in Detroit, he was, I remember, anytime they would list him as playing that day, they would add maybe 10,000-15,000 people with no trouble come to the ballpark if they just had a chance to see him play, you know, because he was on his way out. And that was his last year when I was there. And matter of fact, he was so well admired. What happened is that after we had our batting practice at the home club, the visitors would have there, so we went and changed the sweatshirts and everything. And I tell you, the whole ball club came out to the dugout to watch him take batting practice.
Mm-hmm.
The whole ball club, Detroit Tigers.
A lot of admiration. A lot of guys did that in a lot of ballparks over a lot of years with him.
It's just admiration, and you have to say that is some hitter. When you can get people like the ball players we had at Detroit from number one, you'd say quality ball, number one all the way down to the bottom, they were all out there more or less in the dugout and watching, observing this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, relax, you know, but just have an opportunity to watch him because you probably feel he's not going to be around too much longer.
All right.
For a guy like me to see him, it's a good chance for me to really get a good look at him. He just sent the ball in like in the upper deck. It was such a nice swing. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
A lot of photographers around. That is admiration you have for a guy with a lot of ability.
Oh, yes. Probably not. Yeah, there may have been a better hitter somewhere, but it's awful hard to say who it was.
Well, records can be set. But as far as when I look at it, I look at it as a stance, you know, the way you swing with perfection, like perfection in the way you attack a ball and coordination, everything. He just had that picturesque way of hitting a ball.
Mm-hmm.
He was big, and for a person that was big in stature, that's difficult. A lot of times big people can look clumsy, more or less, but he perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And I could understand from that point on. I could see on why, with a good set of eyes, he could be such a tremendous hitter.
And that's, yeah, and he was.
Off the back foot and everything. But there are a lot of good ball players. You know, we had in Detroit, you had a guy like Gal Kaline, of course. He was an all-around ball player. Run, throw, and hit. Smart. Cash was a heavy, you know, good hitter. Is hitting home runs, can play first. But the degrees, you know. But they're good ball players up around Aparicio's and Nelly Fox. I was happy to play at the time when they were still around. They were a nice combination.
Mm-hmm.
I've had chats to hit against Early Wynn, who paid me nice compliments. And I knocked him. I knocked him out of the box in Kansas City. I owed him one for hitting me in Chicago. He told me he was going to hit me.
Well, he got a lot of them over the years, didn't he?
Well, I played in Chicago and. I didn't know his background, but Seaver and Lumpy, evidently, when they were with the Yankees, and they were with this Kansas City, now they told me that when I got my single through the middle, past the mound, a line shot past Early Wynn, they says, George, he's going to hit you next time. I said, why is that? They said, well, he doesn't care if you get hits off him, but you don't hit him back at him. I said, well, you know, who gives a damn what he thinks, you know what I mean? I'm going to hit the ball or I'm going to hit it. They said, well, we're just telling you, he's going to hit you. So I said, well, face it. I told him, I said, well, he's not going to back me out of here. I'll tell you one thing. I said, well, I'll find out when I get there. Well, he hit me. Right in the leg. So going out first base, I got my respect for him. And I wasn't one guy to say bad words to you, I think. But I looked at him, and I was kind of mumbling to him, you know, and staring at him as I was trotting down first. And he looked at me. So when we got him in Kansas City, he was going for his 300th victory. And he was in about the fifth inning. and he made a mistake. He threw me a ball he shouldn't have, I guess, and I sent it out of ballpark and I sent it to the showers. So I don't know if I says, the guys in the dugout, I said, yeah, pick up your jacket and take your hike, you know, but not loud enough, I guess, for him to hear, because to the other bench, I wouldn't, it didn't make that much to me, but I mean, it was enough to me to get him.
Yeah.
Next day in the paper, he says, you know, I'll tell you, I have to admit, the kid, I give the kid credit. He says, the kid Lusick, he said, you don't back him out of the box. He knew he had hit me earlier, but
yeah.
In Chicago, he says, but when he took the ride to the showers, I guess, put his jacket over his shoulder and walked up the runway. So the next day, he did pay me compliment. He said, there's a kid, he said, he's not, of course, he's going for a 300, so I mean, I had to wait, make him wait a little longer.
Yeah, he got it, but
he paid me compliment.
And he didn't say nice things about a whole lot of folks either.
No, but he gave me what I want. In other words, he clarified that to people, if they ever thought anything or second-guessed me, here's a guy, a veteran, saying that, you know, there's one ball player, and if you hit him, he's not going to back him out of there. He's just going to come after me.
Mm-hmm.
I had a reputation like, don't wake me up. You can say things about me, what you want. That's a mistake because I'll go after you because I have my big thing is just like a referee with a technical. It's my bat in my hand. In other words, you must throw the ball up at me.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to continue to hit me, fine. You know, I'm going to get out. But the thing is, you're going to still have to throw it over the plate. And as long as I got this bat and I have confidence in this bat, I'm coming after you. And that's why I hit. That's probably why I was a very good hitter with men on base. I just met the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I loved when I had men on base. I really had RBIs on my mind. Somehow to get them in a man on third, I just really dug in and tried to make sure I got part of that. Not only part of it, had a good swing and everything to get them in.
That's what wins the ball games. Well, George, over your career, did you save mementos? Souvenirs?
Yeah, I did save souvenirs, but the kind of souvenirs I saved, I don't know if they were worth anything. I saved these little banners in many of the cities I went through, minor leagues and major leagues, little postcards from hotels and things of the city.
Mm-hmm.
But these little triangular banners, I don't know if you see them. You probably see them at times at souvenir places. Just
the little pennants like
yeah, little pennants like
about half size or one third size.
Annapolis or Chattanooga or
yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah, I probably have maybe 50 of them downstairs in different cities. I thought they were kind of cute.
Yeah,
that was like something to keep for me, a reminder of where cities I've been to.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's what they're all about. Is
hotels and sometimes the hotels I was at, I thought they were nice to have.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you one thing: after you leave baseball, they stay in an area where you hardly ever get back to them. You hardly ever really go through them, like your scrapbooks.
Yeah.
You know, scrapbooks are my entire baseball. Probably eight scrapbooks. There's a lot of information in it, but I never really research it.
Well, it's nice to have, though. If friends
are for my children.
Friends or family, yes.
Right.
But the kids will, especially the grandkids, will love this stuff.
To bring them out is so nil. It's something.
Yes.
But I'll tell you one thing. They're there. Somebody really wants them. Like, I guess maybe when I'm gone, maybe the kids sometime will have that as memories, you know, something.
Yeah, and they will love it. You know they will.
Yeah, there's a lot of nice, many nice days I've had in baseball, and they're all in there, you know, clippings and everything like that. They're preserved and well taken care of. My wife did most of that. You know, when I was on a road trip, she put them, compiled all of them. And, it's a very nice job, nice to have them, but they'll stay there for some Sunday. Somebody will want them someday, I don't know.
Oh, somebody will. You know they will. What about fan mail? Do you still get much fan mail?
Well, it's getting worse now because what happens is I get the fan mail through the years, no problem. Yeah, I do get them. What has happened through the years, and I was unaware of this tool recently, a couple of years ago. Probably I started maybe last year. I started charging people for autographs because I was, that didn't bother me. Through the years, I never thought, but I have a few people I know have told me that they're getting their memorabilia collectors, and they say, George, everybody that seems to send an autograph is charging for autographs today because there's a lot of rip-offs going on.
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, this time, and you're giving autographs away for free. So I have a minimum charge that I charge, and it's no big deal. But I haven't been questioned on it yet.
Okay, what do you charge if I can?
$2.
Oh, that's
but that's
certainly
like the standard.
Yeah.
That's more or less standard. But I have never had a kickback on it. Nobody ever said anything bad about it. Evidently, I've been shown what the autographs that people are demanding, more or less, they charge. That's a normal.
Well, card shows.
But see, well, you don't even. I don't know if you want to put that right. That
I'm not going to.
It's so trivial to me because I'm not making a fortune off that. That's no problem. But you see, through the years, I've been really great. In other words, this has probably been going on for quite a while, and people are just saying, George, I mean, so many people have told George, you know, we're paying for autographs, and you should have been doing this. And
mm-hmm.
I haven't, but I have witnessed a few. I have witnessed a few times where I have signed things for people, and I have seen them being published for sale.
Yeah.
And somebody's made $500-$600 on me. And give me like $25 to my charity, you know, to send me a check. And I've caught this already.
What?
And I know who. The amount of times I've ever signed a bunch of pictures for anybody is very, very limited. Okay? But they used me this way, and I found they. They used me to make money.
Yes, that's not right.
It really disturbs me because, like I said, I was a nice individual for the past 25, 28 years or so, whatever. And I always never charge anybody, but I have to be careful. You're going to do a full stunt on that, on me like that, you're just not going to make a clear profit no more because I've heard too many of these things have been happening to ballplayers many times. And I guess what happens is ballplayers just have, I've heard stories of some guys won't even sign for you.
A lot of guys don't sign anymore.
And you can understand, I really can understand it because, like I say, I never really worried about charging anybody, but I've never had any repercussions as a result of doing it. The ones that wanted my autograph are very happy to get it.
Sure they are, of course.
And
the fans are.
More than anything, I've a lot of times felt if anybody should charge, it's probably guys in my category. I haven't made a killing off of baseball. I never, maybe I shouldn't even say the word killing, but I haven't made a living off of baseball as far as money was involved. My salary was never high. I always thought I was underpaid.
And they're not going to get you to endorse things.
Right. So, you know, you're talking about a very limited amount of money. It means it's not that great, but the thing is, I am probably more need than, well, I know I am, than other people that are making a good living right now without having to work. And
yep.
They can make it with the shows and everything.
Right.
I understand.
And they make a killing at it, as you said.
They do. And I'm not guilty of making big money here. I wouldn't say guilty, but I'm not in a position to make that. I wish I was, but I'm not.
Sure.
You know, that's the way life is.
Let me tell you a story. You remember Davey Williams played second base
right.
for the Giants?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Davey's just, got to be one of the half dozen nicest guys in the whole world. I interviewed him a couple of years ago.
Right.
Said a fellow sent him 50 8x10 glossies, all the same shot, and said he was a school teacher, and he gives the pictures out to his classes when they do things good.
Right.
And would Davey sign him? So Davey signed him. He said 3 months later he got 50 more from the same guy. And he said, you know, no matter how good his kids were, 50 pictures of Davey Williams would have lasted a lifetime.
Sure.
So he tried to call the guy. He said his guy said he was a school teacher. So he tried to call the school systems all around New York. Nobody had ever heard of him. So he said, you know, what the heck. He signed him, sent him back, and closed the note, said, don't do this again. Okay, well, he told me about this. In the meantime, I found an ad. This guy not only, and you may have been on, I don't remember, but this guy not only had done Davey, but there was probably a list of 100 ball players that he was selling pictures from anywhere from $8 to $15 a piece, depending on the career the guy had. And, you know, that's just, that's a crime.
Yeah, they've used the they just use you being a nice guy and to make money, and it's what they're doing is shortchanging the people. When I say people, I mean the kids.
Sure.
Ball players, we know the kids are innocent game, and I always had heart for the kids, and it really hurts at times. But you see, there's probably deception many times when you get fan mail. It may not even be a kid, although it's written like a kid.
Yep.
Grown up. We don't know.
That's right.
I don't know. So it's like you have mistrust. You almost have the mistrust for everybody anymore. anymore because you don't know who is using you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for their financial reasons. But that has come. It has come to that point, and I think ball players have shied off as a result.
And it's I think justified.
And I can say it because I know I've heard people, so many people tell me of what's being charged at the shows and things like this and the going price. And of course I don't go to a heck of a lot of card shows. And when they've when the major leagues and other organizations have written me about card shows, a lot of times I just became negligent in writing back about them. You know, so maybe I didn't get on a list. I don't know. But around this area is kind of hard because you're competing with Yankees and Mets.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And if you talk about the fan mail out west, people really have some nice, fine letters of people that are now up in the 30s, were kids back when I played, and their fathers are probably deceased.
Sure.
They would tell me nice stories about when their dad took them to the ballpark. I mean, when you had someone mentioned to you riding for 8 hours on a train coming from a farm out in Kansas somewhere.
Yeah.
Across for 8 hours on a train on a Saturday to come to a Sunday game and then making a round trip of 8 hours and having a kid say, I really enjoyed, you know, seeing you play. My dad brought me and it was one of the greatest things. A kid like that, you don't even charge him anything. I just wrote him, just sent him an autograph, no problem.
Sure.
No, it was truth out there.
Right.
When he mentions the territory, and that's what I call a kid really interested in baseball and reliving some nice memories.
Yeah,
and the ballpark for maybe one day of the year. It was a big time, big day in the year when he took the train
right.
to go to see to Kansas City.
Yeah, and those people you have to respond
sure.
to. Yes,
I was never unfair with anybody, but I think I was unfair to myself because I was being used many a times, probably. I used to sign, there's people would sign, they would have 3-4 sheets on me, ask me 30 questions, I mean, from university and everywhere. And I'll tell you, after a while, some of the things, you begin to wonder if they're being written without my permission.
Yeah.
And it's not fair. It's not
you're
really
right.
Fair,
it's absolutely not.
You know, and there is no compensation or anything, but I'm being fair to you like I am today, you know,
well,
doing my thing because a few other, yeah, see, my wife just mentioned you don't put something that gets me in problems. In other words, when I relate something to you, I have a nice, clean path, and I'm not knocking baseball. I have some disappointments in life about salary and stuff, but I didn't want to pinpoint names, so I didn't have to get
no, well, this is not...
Hurts, though.
It's not an expose. It's just to get your opinions and let people know you're still around. You mentioned disappointments. What about regrets from your career?
Regrets from my career?
Yeah.
I have no regrets baseball-wise. The only thing I really regret, that one thing I think I shortchanged myself in life is that I wished I had, while I was playing ball, had taken up correspondence courses and picked up at least a certificate for teaching and gotten the educational field. I thought that would have been changed my entire life around because I've had my struggles in life working, and a result of not having at least a certificate, some education above high school where it would have helped my career, especially when you look at the fact that I had all this experience in the big leagues, which I probably never gave it a thought at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have helped me, put me in a direction where I probably the rest of my life would have been in the school system, and then with the background I have, would have probably pursued another 2 years, and probably been in the educational field with coaching or something, maybe even on a college level. I wouldn't doubt it, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to see that, though, when you're still playing.
Sure. Not only that, it's hard to see it back in those times when I had a big family. There was no people in college in my family. My father worked on a railroad for 30 years, never owned a car, Coldwater Flat. I mean, he lost his home in Pennsylvania during the Depression.
Wow.
It was tough. So
you
weren't here to think of college. But it hurts you later on in life because this past year, 14 months, I've been out of work.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we were working for a nice company. Matter of fact, Bobby Malkmus was working with Fisher Scientific.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Springfield, New Jersey, and we have like 23 branches, and there's been some change of management over the years. From the Fisher name is there, but we went on a strike over health care out-of-pocket contributions for benefits. It was increased like to, a projected increase of about 450% over 3 years, so we could pay like $103 a pocket. But we could hit, you know, when you look at it now, we could imagine. We wanted to go back in after 4 months, and they locked us out. They put replacement workers in there. And they have security watching the place, corporate security, like they hired camcorders and everything. So they just kept us out of work.
And it's still that way?
Pardon?
And it's still that way?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, matter of fact, I'm trying to go to retraining to stay alive with benefits. I've just been out of work 14 months.
Golly, that's tough. That's just really tough.
And Bobby Malcolms became a scout when I came in there. He got the Cleveland job as a scout. That was 12 years ago, 12, 13 years ago. Well, 12 years I have at Fisher, but it's unbelievable that in my day of my life, at this age, that they should do this to me.
Yeah. What are you, 50, 57, 58 now?
Well, I don't even want to get into it. I know I said
okay.
It hurts. You know,
yes, I bet it does.
It's the time of life to be put out of work.
All right. All right. It's a time you should...
77 people put out of work, and if you tell people you're on strike or there's a lockout, they don't realize we've had double security. Springfield cops have been out there for 6 months. We're paid round the clock, 24 hours a day, like $25 an hour.
Mm.
If you had two cops on a street, you'd get $25 an hour on the clock. But an 8-hour shift made $200. They could pay that, and then they could pay the security probably over $1 million this past year, where they have the corporate security with two cars out there with camcorders on, and they have sophisticated electronic equipment in the cars where they pick up what you're saying out in the street and all this. I mean,
okay.
That's a big time to do this. You have to have money, a corporation.
Oh, yes.
And Fisher is one of the biggest distributors in the health care industry.
Oh, yeah. Fisher's a huge operation.
They don't care about our own. The way the union and the international has been saying to all people concerned is they don't care about our own health care.
Oh,
and
man.
Yet they're providers of in the health care field, a major distributor.
Yeah, I'm a veterinarian. I get a lot of things through Fisher.
Yeah. If you, believe me, they just locked us out.
Wow. Well, that's disappointing.
Yeah, they just, they don't even sit and negotiate. They have the meetings, but they don't negotiate.
Well,
I don't know what's behind it, really. You know, I don't know whether they want some people not in there forever, but why you burn nice people?
No, it's hard to understand.
They wrecked my life, really, just this past year and a half.
Well, golly, I hope it straightens out.
Well, you know they're going to discriminate. People will discriminate here and there. The economy's been bad in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
As far as employment. So there's maybe four or five people got jobs since then.
Wow.
It's been tough.
I can imagine. The economy's so bad elsewhere, it's just really hard to go somewhere else and start over.
Yeah, and like I say, I you know, my head's been so much. I've been in such it's so depressed at times over the situation. I say, why I don't deserve it. You know, I didn't deserve it because even Bobby Del Greco was out of work in Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
He was driving a newspaper truck, and they were on strike. But it wasn't like ours, a lockout. Ours is a lockout. They took work out of our place and put it down in Delaware and hired people down in Del Mar, Delaware, and added a shift down there and took our work out prior to the strike here, so they anticipated something.
Yeah, evidently.
They had a game plan. They had a game plan, we didn't, you know, but I was just a worker. So I wasn't involved with committees or anything like that. I was just a worker, but where I am now is really in terrible shape as far as being without a job.
Yeah, I can imagine. At least Del Greco's papers have started going again.
Well, I think new owners got in there, I think, but his son may never get a job back there because I was talking to his wife, and she said Bobby was out of work since April, and that was in January now, so April to January, and new owners took over the Pittsburgh paper, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think I read that.
And she said he had a chance of going back as a driver, but they were doubtful that the son would get a job back. He was also a driver there. They were afraid that he wouldn't get. He had three kids.
Oh, man.
So I said, oh, my goodness. I said, you're not the only ball player really having his problems, but what happened to me is it should never have been a problem because these people make lots of money, and I worked much overtime in that place. I was a devoted worker through the years. I was thanked many times for the overtime work weekends and things there. And to be treated like this, be out of work at this time in my life, it really hurts. I become so disillusioned Mm-hmm. You wonder why. How can you? Don't you have any heart for people? Whatever the problem is, we wanted to go back in February. Why don't you resolve it? No problem can't be resolved if you sit down and talk it over. If you have a problem with the, if it's with individuals in there, you sit down with the union and tell them we have an ongoing problem. We want this eliminated. You know, if that's the case, but I think it's something over and above the health care. Because at the point February came along, we said we'd go in there and pay the 10% in the 3 years. Originally it was 7, 8, 9. I mean 8, 9, 10.
Uh-huh.
We said, well, Peyton, then she changed it to 10, 10, 10. We still were going to go in, but they locked us out. I said, I just don't, direction you don't understand.
Yeah, I
can. Why you do this to people? Because we do have good workers there.
Yeah.
And we push a lot of work, and they're not doing that much there, but if they're doing it somewhere else, I think they're just hiding a lot of facts. I believe they're either trying to bust the union or certain people they don't want, but how could you do this to people, put them out, the good people that work through the years? How could you do this to them?
It's not just the people. It's each person is responsible for 3 or 4 other people.
That's right. That's right.
Well, I certainly hope it's something that is eventually straightened out for you, George.
Well, I don't know. You just can't. You'd think some big people would come down to this plant, and you'd think the president would do something, because even though it's been on the books for years, we understand this replacement workers. People try to say, well, when Reagan came in, this happened with the airline controllers. You know, we understand that. But then I hear that they had in their contract that they weren't supposed to strike, had a clause. But nobody has ever used it like they're starting to use now. More and more, they're bringing these replacements. And I think what they're going to do is they're going to devastate this country. They're going to make more people poverty-stricken.
They're doing a good job of it so far.
You know what you're doing? When you lock people out, you're making like a circus of your employment. You are now putting people in that coming off the street could be unemployed for some reason. Putting them in as fresh, maybe you're going cheaper wages. I don't know what it is. But you see, by worrying about your finances, your secondary issue is the people. And when you're like in the healthcare business like Fisher has been, and they say it's our people make the company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can you say that?
That's right.
You're not giving their job back.
Oh, man.
So that's untrue. But you see, I've always been fair in my life, and I've been what I call a good worker, a dedicated worker. I haven't been a problem person. Why am I being treated like this? I have to talk about myself because there's other people. It is my life affected.
Of course it is.
And there's along with others, but it really hurts, and it's one of the biggest setbacks I've ever had in my life.
Yes, I can certainly see that.
Because I've gone trying to get scouting jobs. I wrote to Whitey Herzog, and I wrote to Hayward Sullivan, John McHale, got people that I'm familiar with, you know,
mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Campbell. He's retired. John's probably retired now, from what I hear.
Yes, I believe he is.
You try, but it's tough, you know. But I was trying to straighten out my life again. I still may go retraining to stay alive here. I don't know what's going to happen down the road, but I've been looking for some kind of direction. Somebody employ me and get on with my life, but I'll tell you, it hurts. It hurts.
Well, you'll make it. You'll make it. You've got two positive...
I hope so.
I know you're down right now, but you still sound upbeat, and that's what it takes.
Yeah, well, you're upbeat until I haven't had a scratch that bad where you have no income at all, you know.
Right.
To this point, it's been that way where we had something coming in and you're still managing, but when it becomes a situation where you have no income at all, which is could be soon, then you've got the problem.
That's scary. That's right.
If I lose my home over, what happens, I don't know.
Oh, you boy.
Know, that is the problem, because at my time of life, I don't know. It's just, I've going to politicians, everything, trying to get work, but, you know, they all tell me it's hard out there right now, so they are trying to help me, but Jersey's unemployment is finally going down, so I may go to retraining, and I hope that can give me something with someone, you know, instead of just being in a warehouse. I worked in a warehouse, and had some nice experience, and there's truckers and receiving. But that's a common thing today. There's many people looking for warehouse work.
There's a lot of folks out there looking for it right now for anything they can find. Well, George, let me ask you one more question, and we'll wrap this up. Would you go back and be a ball player again?
Would I go back?
Would you be a ball player again if you were 18?
Yes, I just changed other aspects of my life.
Yeah.
But, as I was playing ball. No, and no regrets that way.
Okay, great.
Game, and I have one way of looking at life, and I've talked to people, and they kind of make me remember that even though they never played ball, they would love to have had an opportunity.
Oh, goodness, yes.
So I had that opportunity. I was successful at it out of maybe 600 ball players, like people would mention to me, people, lawyers, and I had a lawyer friend who said, George, I'll never forget, out of 600, I wish I could be one of the best
sure.
600 in this country. Now, you were one of the best, one of the 600 in this United States and outside the United States, where ball players came from, Cuba and other places, you know, so 600 people, you were one of those 600. You really accomplished something in your life, but it's this part of my life that's it's a downer, you know.
Yeah.
I've lived through it and worked, but this is the downer I'm going through right now, a real hurter. And I just came, I'm getting close to where, you know, I never figured this would happen to me, and it really hurts now. It really hurts because I thought I'd never see the day this would happen to me because of the company I was in.
It's hard to foresee, especially when you've got a company with a reputation as Fisher.
Well, they always had a nice reputation, but they changed people's. The Fisher brothers aren't controlling people anymore. They have 49%, like they sold controlling stock to outsiders. Allied Signal had it for a while, and then
American.